360 podcast. What are you doing, Jay Bird? Are you all nestled under the mistletoe?
It's a cold night up here, Steve. It's a cold night. Winter is upon us. Winter. Christmas right around the corner. Well, but it's going to be warming up.
Day after tomorrow or something. You know.
Exactly.
What are you going to do? Jay's going to go see the family. I'm sure some of the people that are listening right now are sitting with their family going, I wish I wasn't here. So,
that's that. At the in-laws.
Oh. Going, why didn't I get musky baits for Christmas?
That's what Fred's going to be doing.
You know, if you get freaking people get you socks, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Just let
us know. On the good side of it, Elmer's got his power back on. He had no power for like 3 or 4 days after that big storm last week.
People across the country have been dying to know that Elmer has power. Thanks, Jay. That reminds me, though, is that, you know, you get the big storm up there. It got cold, you know, but there's still some of us fishing. You'll never believe who I got to come on and do a fishing report, Jay.
Oh, who?
Ricky Bobo.
Really?
Can you believe that? Out of retirement. Probably one of the greatest West Virginia anglers ever, Ricky Bobo.
How'd you swing that?
He's the original creaker.
I know.
It cost a lot of money. Yeah, a lot of phone calls here. He just got out of Moundsville for about the fifth time. But anyway, gotcha. Here's the West Virginia Creeker Report with Ricky Bobo.
This is your boy, Ricky Bobo, with the West by God Virginia Creekers Musky Report. Them fish are eating on them shad, and they're eating on them carp, too. I'm about out of phone minutes here, so I got to get going. This has been your West by God Virginia Creeker Musky Report with your boy Ricky Bobo. Yee-yee!
That was amazing.
I've never heard better information in my life.
It's the detail, too.
Ricky Bobo, king of the creekers.
Dialed in like nobody's dialed in.
It's a shame he ran out of minutes there, so we'll probably hear more from Ricky Bobo in the future.
I sure hope so,
folks. Stay tuned for them hot Ricky Bobo tips. Anyway, Jay, you have to head to your family for Christmas. I have to head for mine. We're busy as heck, folks. This is going to be like the shortest episode ever. We're coming back week before New Year's, next week here. Gonna get crazy. We got new baits coming out, all that stuff. I will say this, man. There's the cool freaking premiering the Savage gear, the sucker that's coming out from them. That's a coming out soon product right now, which is a pretty cool little swim bait. Mm-hmm. Savage gear just put out. That's new up. Friggin' Titans are sitting in like a shipping container somewhere. We'll talk about that one here soon. I'm going to need a toupee for Christmas because I've been pulling my hair out here. But anyway, we got just a handful of questions here, folks. We hope you have a wonderful Christmas.
Yes.
Merry. I hope you get musky baits. If you don't get musky baits, there'll be a first of the year sale so you can buy yourself musky baits.
Right around the corner.
Just right around the corner. Just say, you know what? I didn't get anything I want. You know, if you're a dad, I'm sure you got like a drill. You know? You want a headlock. You don't want a drill. So we'll keep you up on that, guys. But anyway, in all seriousness, we appreciate all the support of the podcast. Thank you for making us number one yet again for another year. We do appreciate that. And all that fun stuff. I'll shut up. Let's knock out a couple Q&A. It's the Christmas gift to me and Jay that we have a short week this week. So,
yay!
Luke says, when you talk about adding weight to a bait, how do you do it? It seems like if I add a bell sinker, et cetera, by the hooks, I can mess up with hooking, interfere with a lot of things. What's sort of going on? How do you approach adding weight to a bait? Love the podcast. Luke, I mentioned in another episode here recently where you can use like, it's a tennis racket tape. It's a lead tape. So you have tape that is just a few grams. It'll actually tell you on the package it's X amount of grams per inch. if you know the metric system or enjoy marijuana, you understand grams. So that's how drugs are how the American youth has learned the metric system, Jay. Correct me if
where
I'm wrong.
Where it's legal. Where it's legal.
Where it's legal, heck no. Everybody in Florida in the 80s knew the metric system. Mm-hmm. That's a fact. Anyway, it's just a joke, folks.
You're talking about adding weight.
Talking about adding weight. Can't, we're moving some weight, boys. Ricky Bobo. I'm not. Ricky Bobo knows about moving weight.
I can't get over it. It's,
I can't believe
awesome.
We got him.
Yeah, well. Pfft.
Every guy in West Virginia, they know who Ricky Bobo is.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, hell yeah, you do.
You pull out the strings. You really pull out the strings. You know what I'm talking about?
Him. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Guy's a 9-9 tiller killer. Anyway, back to grams. You get into the lead tape. So there's plumber's tape, there's tennis racket tape, right? Storm makes suspend dots. I don't know how bad Storm products are, but you have like Storm suspend dots and all that stuff. I don't like adding bell sinkers too often to crankbaits because it's a counter pendulum effect. Right.
Right.
So the bait swings one way, the sinker swings another, and it sort of inhibits the action. I like to add the weight with the adhesive tape to those crankbaits. Now, like on a dive and rise bait, before I worked up the Titan, shameless plug, you know, that has internal weighting that you can change out. You know, on my Suix, you screw in weights, you do bell seekers, anything to get those things to actually run. So it can be done. Your dive and rise is a little bit more forgiving. You know, whether it becomes, I mean, there's some glide baits that are too light. If you put equal lengths of tape on either side and sort of line them up perfectly, you can augment the sink rate of a glide bait with that lead tape pretty effectively without screwing the action up. So what you got to do is the safest bet is look at the bait and go, this is how it looks without the lead, whether it be a bell sink or whatever, and this is how it looks when I've added it. Have I screwed up the action? You know what I'm saying? You don't want to really inhibit the action to achieve that depth. Now, with that being said, a little trick that you can do, which is super ninja move, is, and a lot of us are impatient. We don't want to do all this crap and go, ugh. But you can actually add a sinker above the leader, right? So you can do on a crankbait, the action's going to be fine. You're just sort of dragging the sinker along again, that bait, to do what you need to do with it. So you can do a special rig where we put an ounce of lead in front of the sinker. If you're in a straight wire, put it on the leader. So the bait's doing the same thing. You're just getting drugged down by the leader. If you're trying to get it really deep, I like doing the rubber core sinkers for that. So are we going to slow down the sink rate? Or are we going to drive it deeper? Rubber core sinkers are great in that methodology. To put them on the leader, you can put on your fluoro leader. That's like with a rubber core, you're not really marring anything, right? Mm-hmm. You're not tying or crimping it on. You could have put above your knot. You could put on the leader, wherever you need to be. So you know the bait's not changing, but that leader's dragging it down. That's the easiest way I know if we need to get some serious depth or really slow things down. One thing I've done too as of late is to try to get crankbaits to hang a little bit longer. I've actually been playing with like really heavy leaders, and I don't mean leaders with lead. I mean like crazy wire. I was going through some of the stuff, ended up inheriting here in the bait cave. I found old, like it's like 290 pound leader wire, Jay.
Okay.
It's crazy. It's I mean, it's essentially the diameter of a bucktail wire, but softer.
This is flexible wire?
No, it's not flexible. It's straight wire, like on a spool, like you would get your toothproof.
Single strand?
Okay. Single strand, but it's really thick. But it's mm-hmm. It's not like a rigid stainless like a bucktail would be. So if a fish gets it, it's going to bend. It's going to do this. But that is really good at slowing the rise of baits without screwing the action up. So it's like a heavy weight leader, you know, of adding some grams or adding some weight in the front there. Without lead, just to slow the rise of these baits, and as long as it's on the leader, it's on the line, it doesn't really inhibit the movement of the bait per se. It will change the action, because if you have more weight forward, it'll change the rise. You know what I'm saying? It's going to rise tail first in general. You know, it's not going to rise as evenly, But if it's about depth and action more so than about what it looks like on the rise, then you're in good shape. But there's a lot of ways to skin that cat, per se.
Right, right.
You know, just play with it. Again, like I said, look at the bait. Does it look good without it? Okay. What does it look like when I've added the weight? You know, just doing this boat side and going, if it looks good enough, whatever it takes, as long as your action still looks good. Cal says, reminiscing on a musky shop vid from 3 years ago where Jay is running rampant through the shop looking for Pete, only to find Pete by the nets eating some cake when he should be working.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Now we have Todd and Dave. We're taken back to the days when the new hot Frable net was a Smith & Wesson 357. That is true. Mm-hmm. That is true. Oh, hold on. I'm just going to do it live, folks. Here's a Smitty. You hear that beep? That's a Smitty. Jake Smith.
What's going on?
I was actually calling you to try to get your dad on the podcast, but you're actually live on the podcast. What are you doing, Smitty?
Oh, just cleaning up the kitchen a little bit here.
Can you hear me, Jay? Folks, this is the hot Northwoods fish and chips we're looking for. How are you cleaning the kitchen?
Oh, just putting the dishes away and cleaning up. I made some chicken tonight.
Tell us more.
That's about it.
What kind of chicken?
Just chicken breast.
Just chicken some, breast. Are you a breast man rice. Or a thigh man?
Oh, I don't know.
That's an easy question.
Thigh.
Thigh man. Good call. Good call, buddy. He's a thigh man. But,
I got to get some stuff ready. I don't really get guide much ice fishing, but I have a couple of my summertime clients that I take out. So I'm taking some guys out tomorrow.
Mm-hmm. Going to take them out for a dinner roll after that?
Well, maybe.
Maybe. Yeah.
It's not Friday, though, is it, though?
No, it's not. You can't get the fish fry, folks. Yeah. What are the Smitties doing for Christmas?
We're going to go to church on the 24th, and then we're going to, Santa might show up, I guess. And maybe there'll be musky baits. I'm not sure.
Nice. Do you guys just give each other Smitty baits for Christmas? You're like, oh, here's a Mercer Creek. And you're like, all disappointed.
We have.
So, goodness. Well, anyway.
Here, Dad, here's one of your own lures.
I love it. Folks, these are the in-depth. This is the things you miss with the, you know, the in-depth conversation with the pros. Question.
Yeah.
How do you season your chicken breast?
I didn't put that much on it, really.
Oh, goodness. This is why. This is why we're frowned on by other ethnicities, okay? What'd you put on it? Salt and water?
No, it's just like a little seasoning and a little little paprika for the color.
Oh, paprika. Nice. Oh, that'll... That's that. Yeah. That's, man, that sounds bland, Smitty, not going to lie. What sides?
What's that?
What sides did you have?
What size?
Sides.
Oh, just rice.
Just, oh my god, this is just like the most inspired dining of it. We've got chicken breast, it's seasoned with air and paprika and white
that's
rice.
That's all there was.
That's amazing.
There wasn't much tonight.
Folks, everybody, we're having a food drive.
Nice.
If you're from the South, we're going to have a Smitty food drive. Send them spicy foods, please.
Oh, are they going to send recipes for chicken now?
Please do, guys. If you want to win a free bag.
No.
All right. Please bombard the Smitties with fried chicken recipes. The first one to screenshot a Smitty that you've sent him like a hot wing recipe or something that involves barbecue sauce, I will make sure you get a Smitty bait. Jake, thanks for answering your phone. That was the Smitty,
yeah, no problem.
Smitty chicken breast recipe for the podcast. Talk to you later, boss.
That was incredible, Jake.
That was, that was kind of a boring chicken recipe. Sorry about that.
A riveting interview.
Riveting.
Riveting questions.
These are the things.
Yeah, those were
hard-hitting news.
I'm glad everybody learned a lot tonight. I'll talk to you guys next time.
That's true.
Okay, Jake. All right, talk to you, Jake.
Merry Christmas, Jake.
Okay, Merry Christmas, everybody.
Fred didn't answer.
Try Elmer. Ask him what he's having for dinner.
Okay, hold on. Elmer.
Yeah, hi there.
Elmer.
You're live on the Muskie 360 podcast, Elmer. What are you doing?
Okay, nothing much.
Here's what I want to know. We just got off the phone with Jake Smith from Smitty Bates, right?
Uh-huh.
He ate the worst dinner I've ever heard in my life, right?
Chicken, he ate the worst dinner?
Chicken breast with paprika and white rice. What do you think of that?
Well, can't say that I've tried anything like that either myself.
What'd you have for dinner? Liver and onions? What'd you eat, Elmer?
No. Tonight we had bratwurst.
Nice.
And cheesy broccoli soup.
Yeah, keep going. What else?
And that was it.
Is that what turns up the heat at the Jensen house?
Yeah, it does.
Listen, that sounds, getting the moves.
That was pretty good.
That's what I like. Elmer is your heart attack and stroke proof. If you eat enough bratwurst, it ain't gonna hurt you.
Mm-mm. Nope, it hasn't yet.
Exactly. 75?
Yep.
He smokes 9 packs of cigarettes a day, eats bratwurst, fights raccoons for fun. I'm teasing. Elmer doesn't smoke. Elmer, what do you want for Christmas?
I used to.
What do you want for Christmas, Elmer?
Probably a brand new boat.
Brand new boat.
Go big or go home, baby.
Go home. I was thinking, you know, maybe a free Spitfire chatterbait, you know, but no.
No, we're going big.
We're going big. What would be the dream boat, Elmer?
Well, let's go with a Recon 18-foot tiller.
All right, Elmer. Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Elmer.
To you, Steve.
Be
and
good.
Jody, too.
Yep. All right. Fred.
Stephen Paul, what's going on?
You're live on the Muskie 360 podcast. What did you have for dinner? Elmer Jensen had bratwurst. Jake Smitty Smith had a chicken breast and white rice. What did you have?
I'm going to have fish fry.
That's it. That's the only acceptable answer. That is it. What do you think, Jay? Is fish fry an acceptable answer?
Yeah, I think so.
Fred, say Merry
Christmas. Thank you for the approval. Thank you for the approval, Jay.
Listen, dude. People want
Merry Christmas.
People
want everyone out there.
People wanted more interviews. So here's our interviews, right?
This is hard hitting stuff here, Fred. Are you ready?
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Right. What is your least favorite animal?
Oh, cat.
Bam. Thanks, folks. That's what you wanted to hear, right? That's it. Fred, what do you want for Christmas?
Peace
of
on earth.
That's horrible. That's the worst.
Okay.
That's the worst answer I've ever heard.
Yeah.
All right,
yeah.
Fred. Thanks. On to the next. We're harassing muskie anglers on the Muskie 360 podcast. Thanks, Fred. Meat.
Hello there, Steve-O.
Hey, how's it going, Meat? It's Steve. You're on the Muskie 360 podcast with Jay.
Well, to what do I owe the pleasure?
I just wanted to call and see what you had for dinner there in Hayward this evening.
Well, after taking, a hike out in the woods with with mechs, we came upon some wild fungi. I don't know if any of your listeners are into the shrooms, you know, hallucinogenic or you know, just for culinary purposes. I don't discriminate, but these mushrooms, they were like glowing neon, like the mutant ninja turtles or whatever that, you know, you call them.
Whatever the kids are into,
Everybody's got a, you know, a name for them nowadays. Are the turtles still, that's beside, I'm getting off track here. So anyways, I turned around and Max was, he was just sitting there munching on them like it was, you know, like a Twizzler or something. And, things got a little fuzzy after that. What was the question? Dinner?
I just wanted to know what you had for dinner. That was it.
Well, yeah, I'm not really sure. The last thing I do recall was Max talking to a whitetail and offering to trade his T-shirt for a grilled cheese sandwich.
Well, you have that.
And, that was the last I remember of it. But anyways, how's everybody doing?
We're doing good, Jay. How are you?
Just doing great.
It's good to hear your voice, Jay. The things at the shop are still nice and busy, you know, for the holidays. I don't know.
Everything's shaping up really nicely for 2022. Yep.
Well, that's just, you know, fantastic. You know, I'm doing some more underwater testing under the ice with you know, the tick the Benoit balls and everything. Mm-hmm. Talking to the fish under the water and everything. Oh, which by the way, they say hello to you gentlemen as well.
They said, well, say hello back. Pick me three dying like we've been collecting questions, right? From muskie anglers around the world. Three burning questions for Meat Paina.
Mm-hmm.
Number one.
I'm burning to hear him.
Number one. Are aliens real?
Well, how much time do you have in this week's edition of the podcast, there, Steve? Because the short answer would be a resounding yes with three S's at the end. And, well, I don't have my tinfoil. Is this a secure line?
Barely.
I would prefer if we're going to talk about this that I have a little bit more time to, you know, prepare my, you know, my phone and equipment and, you know, put the tinfoil around the front door and the windows and everything because you never know who's listening. But what about question two?
Number two. Right, number two. How attracted are you to EBS sounds, personally?
I mean, Steve, how long have you known me? And long enough to know, you know. At my age, you know, the rod doesn't bend like it used to and everything. But, you know, when I hear the sounds of them minnows, you know, under the water, but right in the palm of my hands, well, you know, it's, sometimes I have to call my primary care physician because certain things last more than 4 hours.
Number three, as a professional muskie angler, how would you bring peace between Palestine and Israel?
Are any of your sponsors Jewish there, Steve?
All right, Meat Paina, thank you. Is that Merry Christmas, Meat? Say Merry to everybody.
Well, and Merry Christmas to everybody, and you know, be safe out there, and we'll see you on the water.
Jim, the Tube Screamer Stewart, you're live on the Muskie 360 podcast. What did you have for dinner?
I had two tacos and a taco salad.
Yes! That is the best thing we've
Jim,
heard.
Jim, atta boy!
Holy Woo. Goodness. Meat Paina and Mex had hallucinogenic mushrooms in Hayward. The Smitties had completely unseasoned chicken. Imagine if you took a chicken breast, right, and you just sort of boiled it in a pan,
mm-hmm.
it's going to be white It might look slimy. That's what the Smitty's had. Fred said he's having the fish fry, right?
Elmer, that sounds good.
Elmer had a bratwurst. Jim comes through. The only man with spice. This is why they call him the Tube Screamer Stewart, because he actually eats things that have spice to them. So.
That's right.
Anyway, Jim. Thank goodness.
How's it going, guys?
We're doing well here.
Good.
Just giving the opportunity here to say.
I can't stop laughing.
No, it's bad, Jim. Don't listen to this one. We'll be in trouble. This is what we call a career ender episode. Anyway, uh-oh. I just wanted, you know, it's funny. Everybody's eating this bland Midwestern horrorscape of food, right? It sounded like a buffet they would have at a freaking Arby's.
I tell you what, Taco Bell or Taco John's, I mean,
yeah,
they're awesome.
What are you gonna do, boys? That's it. Tacos. That's me and Jim have bonded. Both of our favorite food is tacos. Mail Jim tacos. Anyway, don't mail tacos to the Muskie Shop unless you want a 20% discount. just boxes of soggy tacos showing up. Anyway, Jim, here's your opportunity to just tell everybody on the podcast, Merry Christmas.
Hey, yeah, thanks, guys. Yeah, Merry Christmas to Christmas to everyone out there, man. It's a good time of year, and we sure appreciate all of our blessings. Appreciate all the support from all of our customers and listeners, and it's been a great year and a lot of good fishing, and just hope everybody just has a great Christmas and with their families and loved ones.
Absolutely. Well,
good deal.
Yeah, there you go. Jim sums it up. I don't know if we can harass anybody else, Jay.
No. It's, we can try, but I mean, we hit all the heavy hitters.
We,
you know,
did. Here we were. Oh my goodness. We were, in the midst, I can't believe it, because we're literally in the middle of the question from the guy that said the Frabel's the new 357 or whatever.
That's right.
Goodness, I got it pulled up here. It's been like 30 minutes. He says, here's the questions. Cranks versus gliders versus Suix in a cold front. When do I fish which? I've mainly been using rubber, joining in straight cranks, ticking cover and structure on more windy days, and been using gliders and Suix and twitching cranks on days that are a bit calmer. But he said, I can't get bit. I've watched videos and emulated. I'm making sure my baits are doing something triggering at all times, and I'm using them during the appropriate times. I know musky fishing is musky fishing, but I'm starting to doubt that I'm doing anything right on these days, as I went all summer without boating one in a cold front. Whew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, as a guy that had just a soul crusher today, I mean, we had four suckers out, right? Four. Mm-hmm. And I'm watching fish come in on pan optics, and they would come in and look at it and then swim away. You know, I mean, there's days.
Is today that like that second day of really cold weather that you've had?
Yeah, just a real crapper.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's one of those things of, if you went all summer in the cold fronts and struggled, then it might be a speed thing. It might be a location thing. I like the play. I like what you're doing when you're saying, you know, under these conditions with this presentation, under this, that.
Yeah, I mean, me too. I agree.
Those aren't bad moves. It could be a boat control thing, like you're not getting out on the break, right? So you're maybe fishing too tight still. Or your definition of slowing down or depth is a little bit skewed. What I would do is make sure, and I had this discussion today on the boat, actually with Ricky Bobo, of all people. He was on the boat. Can you believe that? Unbelievable. I landed Ricky Bobo as a guest. But me and Ricky Bobo were on the boat, and we were talking about that. Sometimes boat control and boat positioning is far more than the right presentation. So make sure that, you know, let's say it's Friday and you get off work on Friday and you move some fish, and then it storms, and then Saturday's the cold front. You know, be backing off of the areas that you previously moved fish. Also, too, it's dependent on the seasonality of things, of where they're going to go, whether they're going to bury deeper in the weeds or they're going to move out on the edge. you know, I don't see anything cow. I would point you in that direction of what you're doing there, but maybe expand on it and play with different boat locations where you're going to back off the edges. You're going to fish it deeper. You know, there's something to be said about longer casts in cold fronts and shorter casts as well. You know, how much time is it going to take to trigger that fish? What distance am I working with? Am I covering the deeper breaks? Am I getting off that edge enough? And am I covering the right amount of territory? Because you can do all the right things, but if you're not fishing in the right areas, it's going to fall on deaf ears. Okay. So you want to make sure that you're covering the appropriate areas in the cold front. So backing off to in the summer, backing off to the deeper weedy edge. Jay, we saw up in the Northwoods this year, cold fronts, man, it was a lot of times, here's the weeds, right? The weeds are shoreline, but we're a cast and a half off of the weeds for the fish that are suspended off of that because they've backed off the edge.
We sure were.
Right? And it's a matter of deduction. So we're going to start and we're going to do our jerk bait, glide bait, suic routine. Tight. And if nothing happens, we're going to back it off. And then we're going to back off. And we're going to keep doing that until we find a fish. Right? To the point where you go, you know, when you question, was he weed adjacent or pelagic? Sometimes the line's blurred. Right? Good but point. It's worth looking at. So pay attention to that. The other thing in Jay, you know, Jay is always comfortable in making the outside cast.
Yeah.
And if you're fishing solo, you got to make that cast. But, you know, Jay, you're usually cameraman, so you're rocking it in the back corner of the boat. So Jay's like the guy that's like throwing parallel and throwing out. And it's way easier to dial in when you got a guy that will do that. If you're fishing solo, make a pass where you go, I'm going to go tight, right? Tight's the first pass with, and let's say, you know, he said in windy day. So I got a windy cold front, so I'm going to use my rubber jointed and straight cranks taking cover, right? So we got a little bit of a choppy day, but it's a cold front. The first time around, make that ticking, that clicking, that touching the weeds pass. The second one, do laterals. Lateral to the cover. So if I'm going to throw ahead or I'm going to throw behind the boat, whichever might be more comfortable. And I'm going to go on the outside edge of that so I'm getting a little more face time with those fish and check that. And then we're going to move out and do a cast that's landing where that lateral was. So we're checking the even further out on the structural elements. I think your game plan is appropriate. I think your presentations are appropriate. I think this is going to boil down to a boat control or a boat positioning thing. So check that out and see if it helps. I see. I'll just leave it at that. He says, Konnichiwa, Musky Senpai. My question this week is about high-end lures. I've recently got myself into the illegal underground world of high-end handmade musky raffles, from which I've acquired quite a bit of expensive, beautiful, titillating lures. Do you ever fish lures like barfighters, scallywags, tamers, etc.? And if so, do you see any different results compared to mass-produced counterparts? Also, how many lures do I have to win until I get a big musky PP? God, grief. Konnichiwa. Anyway. I'm sitting here in the bait cave and actually, you know what? I had a guy in the Jay, you can attest to this. I had a podcaster on the boat. He thought the bait cave was a joke.
He thought it did not exist.
He thought it was just talk.
Mm-hmm.
The bait cave is real, folks.
Well, you bet it is.
Piles and piles and piles and piles of baits from you name it. Got them. I don't have some of the weird, like, you know, if you know, Ricky Bobo came out with a bait next week, you know, Ricky Bobo, I might not. It's so redneck, dude. I was dying on the boat. We're like,
where's my God?
What's the most redneck musky fish? You ain't ever heard of old Ricky Bobo? You know, from the cheapest knockoff to friggin' the handmade stuff before anything was mass produced. From
the cool prototypes and old school stuff
and prototypes from a lot of companies. You guys know all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Here's where I'm at. I just do not get excited anymore about the price point on these baits. Okay, unpopular opinion. Now. there are a few baits that are exceptions, and it comes to gliders for me. There's a dude that makes me some custom gliders that he doesn't even make them from other people. I actually lost the last one I had today, so that's a problem.
Mm.
But that glider does something sort of crazy, and it's great. You know, the Linchums, they're great. But I don't need $200, $300, $400 baits. And if you've been on my boat, I talk about it with clients all the time. I'm disgusted by the price of some of the crazy lures. It's gotten to the point where it's not cute anymore. It's not exciting. It is people buying paint jobs and buying hype, right? $100 Twitch baits, it's ridiculous. You know, $150 surface baits, it's ridiculous. You could take $150. I'll say this. You could take $150 and make most of these surface baits yourself, right? You could make some of these crazy baits yourself, spray paint them, and it'd be just as effective. It's kind of crazy. It is at a certain point where you go, is it more productive, right? And I'll say this. Is a bar fighter more productive than a well-weighted, well-tuned Suic? No. Period. Now, the problem with that is most people don't know how to tune a Suic, or they don't know a good one from a bad one, and a bar fighter's consistent. This is a shameless plug again. That's why the Titan's coming out, because it's cheap and it's well-tuned, and it'll kick the pants out of any dive and rise that's on the market right now. But it doesn't have to be $4 billion because I hate expensive baits. And Jay, you can attest, I had multiple offers from multiple bait companies to build the Titan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a fact. I went with the company that would make it the cheapest for the consumer. That was it. Because I'm sitting here going, there is no reason at all. None. I can see no discernible reason to spend $200 on a bait when you can find a tool that'll do it for the same price. And the reason being, because I caught Harbor Freight, right? You guys have Harbor Freight's up there, Jay?
No.
Okay, Harbor Freight is a discount tool shop.
Right? Yep, I've heard of them. Right, sure.
There's one up here next to our Home Depot. So, you know, and we got Lowe's, Home Depot, and Harbor Freight right in my town.
Okay.
If I need a tool that's going to last the rest of my life, I'm not getting it at Harbor Freight. I'll go to, you know, Home Depot. It's like my table saw. So bought my table saw there. But if I need like some tools that are going to get a job done, I'll go to Harbor Freight. You know, that's the way I look at these baits, because if you're going to fish it, it's going to tear up eventually. Right. Jay recently sent me some baits that we needed for filming, and you would not recognize them after 2 weeks. If you fish them, they're going to tear up. Find the cheapest tool to do the job, because musky baits are disposable. That's it.
Every one of them.
Every one of them. So you look at it and you go, ugh, you know, I mean, that's just where I'm at. I mean, like my max price out where I'm done is a headlock. $99. I'm grossed out. Sometimes, I mean, I always swore off, and I'm just shooting from the hip and telling my honest take on things. When I first saw headlocks, I went, I'll never pay $100 for a bait. Never. You're crazy, right? Got one. It's different from anything I'd ever seen. Started fishing them, started having success. That's it. Past that, I'm not doing it. I've got bar fighters. I don't have any scallywags or tamers, but I'll tell you, there's not much that those baits are doing that I can't get out of something else. Right? It is all dive curve and profile. If this custom bait that's $300-$200 has more flash, I've seen jointed crankbaits as of late, Jay, that are like multiple $200, $180, right?
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, some people like to collect them, you know, and they put
we're
them
not,
above
well,
them.
Are we, it, that's you know, what I was saying. Are we doing a job or collect? Right. We're not here to, this is not the musky bait collector podcast. I'm here to catch fish.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the most expensive.
There's a difference.
Dude, I'll tell you, in an unpopular opinion, period, Big Fork has the best custom paint jobs in muskie fishing, period. That guy's 70-some years old and paint so consistent that it looks like it came off a machine.
Just scary good.
Right. That is on par with any custom painter, you know, and there's guys, I'm not going to name names, there's dudes that do like, you know, just Facebook stuff or internet stuff that paint radical custom one-off baits or small batch baits. Mm-hmm. But as far as like custom look and custom feel, Big Fork baits are ripping, right?
Dude, you know what I did today at work?
What?
This is a Big Fork related, so it's okay. Not that off the wall. Had to reset some of the shop has to be reset to make room for the new stuff coming in, right? So Red October, we got some more new custom colors coming in. Had to reset that. Everything had to go. And that starts at one end near the register, blah, blah, blah. So it had to go from the right to the left and had it expand. So you had to take out all the Big Fork. Anyway, laid out all the Big Fork and figured out where to put them and how to put them so they'll fit, you know, like in a grid pattern. There's 430 different Big Forks.
Yeah. Oh, it's crazy.
430. And I was emailing Tom, the guy you're just talking about, the guy that makes them, the one and only, the painter and everything. Yeah. So set that up. 430 different. That's not just the Sandcats. It's all those. Anyway, he's got a new Sandcat coming out with a live tail. It looks amazing. Mm-hmm. And I'm taking a picture section when I finish it. It's just beautiful. It looks amazing.
It's custom work without the price. But, you know, I'm getting at is this, is if I'm going to look at fit and finish and fish catching, right? Mm-hmm. I don't care if a bait is pretty. I don't care if it was forged in the fires of freaking Mount Doom, right? Two hobbits have walked this bait up a hillside and is the greatest bait of all times. Don't give a rat's ass unless it produces fish.
Well, you know, 100% God's truth. When you said you went to some other companies with the Titan, you really did. You went with that one company, said, we can do it. It'll be $100 retail. And you said,
sorry. Not doing it. It's ridiculous. I wouldn't want my name attached to a bait that's $100. As far as like, and I'm not knocking anybody that's charging money like that. I'm just saying personally, that's not the way I feel about it. Because the way I look at these things, musky baits are not an investment. Musky baits are not a collector's item. So why is the proliferation of custom crazy musky baits happening? Unpopular opinion, but it's Christmas, so I'm going to lay it on the line, right? It's so you can tell your buddies and you can impress people with your baits. You can go, I've got this, and other people don't have this, and they think, ooh. It gives you a perceived advantage in your mind. You feel like you have an advantage, right? You feel like, I have a bait that no one else has, or I have this crazy color. That's the thing with custom colors, all this stuff. It is a perceived advantage that is not real. It is marketing. So if I took and had, I'll just pick a bait that I don't think, they might still make some Reef Hawks, but let's pretend they don't. I don't know if they do or not. And I take a Reef Hawk, and I have like limited quantity, 10 Reef Hogs in Diamond Vanta Black, whatever. Mm-hmm. It's exclusive. If a company made it, it must be good. Or if somebody made it, it must be good. That stuff's unproven. It's just you're buying a paint job. You're buying exclusivity. You're buying the conversation for you to repost it on your social media or to tell your boat partner, look what I have. That's the joke. I've joked with so many clients and so many friends that I'm going to write an autobiography when I'm done musky fishing as a joke called Look What I Did. Look what I did. Who cares? Now, am I knocking that? If you enjoy that, if that's what you're into and you like the artwork, because it is craft work, or it's not craft work, but I do like the band craft work, but it is folk art, right? So musky baits are folk art. If you're taking them and hanging them on the wall and admiring the time and dedication that it takes to do some of these amazing paint jobs, and you're a patron of the arts, like so many other musky fishermen that attend the Met Opera and give to, you know, local theater companies because you're patrons of the arts, it's acceptable. But if you're buying them because you think there's a perceived advantage, you are a fool. That's it. That's what I think, for better or for worse. You cannot tell me that a repainted bait is better than a freaking this bait or that bait. Action, 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 action. If somebody makes a custom bait that's got bad action, bring it on. But if it's just a run-of-the-mill crank that's no better than a crane bait, or it's no better than a slammer, or it's no better than a smoker shad, or a depth raider, or you name it, production, what are you getting? You're getting hosed. You're paying for somebody's art project. That's my opinion, for better or for worse. That's why I don't get into that, because I'm focused on spending money on things that are going to produce more fish. Now, I'm going off in the deep end on this, because I'm definitely like an anomaly where, Jay, when I call you up and say I need baits, I don't say I need a bunch of different cars. I'll be like, I need multiples of this, because, you know what I'm saying? It's like dialing in.
Right. I need a shad pattern, just, or a gold.
Right. And again, I have some really cool baits. I mean, I have a bunch of like the old Frenchie Lil May crap, or this, that, or the other. But I'm not going to jump. I'm just not going to spend $200-$300 on a bait. Not going to do it. Not going to do it. Wouldn't be
not
prudent.
Not going to do it. Wouldn't be prudent. So, at this juncture.
Wouldn't be prudent. Now, if that bait is just death on them, let's do it. But, dude, same thing. Had a conversation with Ricky Bobo on the boat today. This is how that joke came about. We're talking about a very notable bucktail company for $100 bucktails.
$100.
$100. Buddy, give me a 1999 Mets Double Eight.
Were they made in Canada?
Eight. Yeah.
Yeah.
$100 bucktail.
Yeah, they're really fancy.
Buddy, I can go in the parts room in the muskie shop and build a better bucktail for $10.
They've got words airbrushed on the back of the blades, though.
Well, and it's not anybody in particular. It's just ridiculous. That's what I... Okay, back it up one time real quick. If you show me a super custom bait, right? Show me a bait that is super custom that there is not a contemporary of. Okay? So I'm looking, there's a bait called, and it's a good bait. They're not expensive, but I'm looking at two of them. So like there's a bait called a Leo. You know, I think those are made in Pennsylvania. They're beautiful. He does a great job on it, but it's like a sledge, right? Or, you look at like Big Daddy's, or you look at T-Bone Widowmakers. I mean, that's Speed Jones, who's a friend of my dad's. It's a brown belly Suic. Friggin'. You get into these crazy top waters, and Jay, I've seen you stuff where I've got like old, was it American hardwood and lock soles, and you know, all this crap. But again, is it the difference maker? It's just not. I mean, the finish, the paint jobs on some of those custom baits are brilliant. I love it. They are just pants crap and beautiful. But, buddy, I'll tell you what, muskies feed from the bottom and up, so I'm worried about what color the belly is. That's it. I mean, I'm on a soapbox because I love cool baits. Don't get me wrong. I geek out on it. But I would rather save my shekels and make sure everything else was lined up and everything was kicking butt and, you know, my electronics were right. You know, I had a ton of baits and I was dialed in. I was spending the time and learning before I'm going to go and jump off the deep end on that stuff. Just for consistency sake. I mean, whatever. I'm soapboxing hard, but dude, I'll tell you, I as a guy that owns what, 400 crane baits that are all the same, I'm not the most exciting, you know what I'm saying? It's like, okay, I own 200 Suics. Most of them are the same.
I mean, look at those crane baits you got. Look at those paint jobs. I'm not knocking them.
No.
Yeah, they're so basic. They're just like these primary, you know, it's just like
primary.
Most of them either cream have vertical bars or they have a scale pattern.
Cream
That's
and
it.
Brown, cream and brown, cream and brown.
Yep. And they work.
You know, action, action, action. I mean, there's some bad gliders. You know, gliders are probably the most notorious stuff. I mean, David French's Shum Shums, obviously great bait, right? I throw some custom stuff some dudes make. It's great stuff. I'm not going to throw $400 ones. You know, when it comes to like my Bulldogs, it's so boring. I have unbelievable amount of Bulldogs in three colors. You know, if you want walleye Bulldogs, I'm your man. You know, it's,
well, you know what works, and you know what works for the majority of the water you fish. Like, and a lot of people don't. They're out there trying to find that.
It
that
is
magic.
This. What
you
I
know,
what I don't, and I'll say this, and I hope to God nobody thinks I'm knocking, because I love the artwork people do on baits. I love it. I love there's a guy, I won't name him. There's a dude, I watch a lot of his stuff, that does some of the coolest paint jobs I've ever seen on baits. You know, and I look at these different companies and they do the coolest paint jobs. Right? Just unbelievable. But I'm worried about the action. Is the action awesome? If it's got a great paint job with bad action, it's a turd. If it's got a lame paint job with great action, it's a home run. Everything else is angler confidence. When I'm telling you, the musky hype train has to end or it will ruin the sport. The musky hype train is just the same crap you hear of here comes new colors and here comes new crap, and you're buying crap because you think it's going to help. The only thing that will help is time on the water that is spent intelligently working on seasonality, patterning, looking for the spot on spot, making the right cast, having better boat control and execution. That's it. You can't buy it. You can't buy it. Me and Jay are both guitar nerds.
I was just going to go there.
And so I lived through, I know. Yeah. For Christmas, I bought Jay a very inexpensive guitar pedal, just because we love each other.
Aww.
And I bought him that. Me and him have talked about this before. There's like this huge thing in guitar stuff and pedals. And if you guys don't know, guitar pedal is a little box that changes the sound of your guitar. They used to be $30. And now there's one called a Klon that's $5,000 for this. It's got less circuitry than your remote control for your TV.
Yeah, you can buy a recording studio for that.
Right. And that's why I look at baits and I go, man, that it's crazy. There's dudes that'll still pay 5G's plus for that Klon pedal. And I made a career with a Telecaster and a $99 tube screamer. So it's not about what you have, it's how you use it. So you guys that are sitting around, because the flip side of the coin of the musky hype train are the guys that are creakers and the guys that have kids and the guys that have mediocre income streams left over after they pay their bills that just want to catch fish. And you're getting stunned on by hoes going, oh, I don't have that. You don't need it. You don't need it. Take it from me. The next time you see a bait and you get bait lust, you don't need it. I'll say this, unpopular opinion. If you have a Suic that runs great and you know how to use it, you don't need a Titan. That's how much shit I'll eat on the comments I've made. If you have a money Suic and you can run it in any conditions and you trust it, you don't need one of the baits I came up with. That's putting your money where your mouth is. Because the rest of the musky stuff and the rest of the stuff in the bait world is bullshit and hype to feed on your lack of success. That's it. Am I wrong? No. That's what it boils down to, is that's why you get the hype baits and you get people losing their minds and spending $100 because they think if they spend $100, they're going to catch fish because they saw the guy on the TV screen do it. Available mid-January, the Titan from Livingston Lures. Previously made by Stephen Paul before he was fired. I call AJ, at least, you know what, if nothing else, I call him like I see him, strikes and balls. Right?
Yeah.
You know, whatever.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. You know?
I mean, it's just true. I mean, honesty. I just being honest. Yeah. I'm being honest, whether I'm wrong or right. If somebody's got the super duper paint job, I mean, I love looking at pretty baits. I'll shut up. God, I hate that crap. Carter, hey guys, question for you. Looking forward to the spring season. I fish a man-made stock lake in Iowa and plan to try to catch some muskies on it in early spring using live bait. The lake has a good population of bluegills and crappie, but no suckers. Is it a waste of time to use suckers on this lake, given that there aren't any in there? Or is this a situation where a sucker might stand out and work better? My other option would be live bluegill or crappie, which is legal in Iowa. Okay, wow.
Would a sucker work in that situation? I would sure think so.
I mean, like I said, not a lot of guys are live baiting in the early part of the time. Understood. No. What I would recommend is this. Make sure that you're rigging. What's the difference between spring and fall? Moving on. Speaking of, you know, it's just, if that's what you want to do and you want to try that, make sure you're using a quick strike rig and make sure you're doing it where it has the minimal impact on a muskie. Okay. With that being said, I don't know. I don't know if a fish, if it's not a, I mean, a stalker doesn't know any better. I don't know. I mean, that's a good question. I mean, try a sucker and let me know. I mean, I would think
a nice meal is a nice meal to a muskie, right. Even though it's something, you know, unnative. It doesn't even exist in that system.
But however, if they're stalkers, I mean, that brings up a really interesting thing, which is almost like we're going down the rabbit hole here and I'm rambling anyway, which is like nature versus nurture. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get into, are you a product of the environment? Are you a product of your influence? Right? Or excuse me, your product of your preconditioned programming, if you will. Sorry. So a muskie genetically should have a predisposition to eating a sucker. One would think. But, you know, if he's not eating one, would it be a foreign introduction? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, a house cat, a house kitten. Not nail a mouse, you know?
You say that, and that's a perfect example because you may remember just a few months ago when Jody Michael brought home the mouse.
Okay, yeah.
And it got loose, and the cat wouldn't eat it. It stared at it like, what are you? And was scared by it. So we have this cat that grew up in a shop. Who knows? I mean, you say that, and you literally hit on something I watch, and I'm like, the mouse is out of its cage, and the cat is scared of it. Is our cat retarded, or... Is it that he doesn't know what this is, or this is foreign, or he had so much cat food and he's just, I don't know. Well, it'd be worth a try. Just make sure you're fishing as little impact as you can in live bait. Try a sucker. If you don't, I would try, you know, in that situation, try a bluegill and try a sucker and try them off the side of the boat and see what gets hit. That would be the best way to figure it out. My thought would be a muskie's going to eat a sucker because he's going to eat a sucker. I think there would be a predisposition for him to hit those. Rick says, when fishing early winter in a large school of shad out deep, I typically tried a vertical jig. I know fish are active because I can see them blowing through holes on my active target. I can get them to follow, but only one or two fish a day. Shad are typically 5 to 15 feet deep in 25 to 30 feet of water. Muskies are 10 to 17. What other baits would you throw in this situation? He's an Ohio guy. So what was it? Blowing holes. He said he's vertical jigging. I like, in that scenario, I actually like a swimming dog. Okay. So if I'm fishing that, I like a white swimming dog. They make some other shaddy looking stuff. It's a bigger than the typical shad. You're going to pull the bigger fish up, or you can use a small swimming dog. But it gives you the best of both worlds, especially he's talking about low rance active target. If you've got that, you can see what your bait's doing. So if he's under it, you can drop it down real quick. It's got a good fall off, but it's got the paddle tail thing. So you can vertically jig it. You can cast it. You can, you know, it looks good on the fall. Another thing I like to do in that scenario is the musky bama, right? So it's smaller, but it's a breakaway. So here's the shad school, and here's a breakaway school of small shad, right? Muskies are blowing through that to blow the packs apart. Guys, and what he's talking about, if you haven't seen it, if you have active target, you have panoptics, you have this new tech, you can actually see natural predation taking place that you're not involved in. That's what this guy's alluding to. I've seen it. He's seen it. I know other anglers that are seeing it on these bait schools. It's like watching something on Discovery Channel where like orcas blow through herring, you know, muskies are doing that. And what I'm going to try to do is target those fish. If you can see an individual, target him. I love muskie Bama in that scenario because you can get depth quick. You can jig it. You can throw it. Same thing with the swimming dog. So if you're interacting with that fish, you can read what he's doing. Is he under it? Is he behind it? Is he moving fast? Is he moving slow? And sort of give him a reason to go on it. You know, another bait that stands out too, it's another Bondi bait, that Royal Orba in that scenario as well. I want something in that scenario that can get deep quick if I need it to. Right? Because if they're, if you're using active target and you're looking, you know, you might think they're at 10 feet, but they're magically at 20. I want something to get down there and be impactful. That is one reason a vertical jig. But the castability and then the jigability of some of these baits are pretty important. So think, you know, Royal Orba, Musky Bama, and the swimming dog, whether it be the 10 or the, what is it, 7.5 is a consideration on that end of things. So. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Anyway, Jay, for the holidays, I did just preach on custom baits too long. I apologize. So, tell us how you really feel. Jay, I bought you a custom painted bait for Christmas.
Oh, man, I'm just thinking about Jake's phone call. Again. That was so great.
The Smitties need spices. We're taking a spice donation for the Smitties. They only have paprika in the Northwoods, Jay. That's it.
I'll have to get them some good quality pepper.
At least black pepper.
Yeah.
Just something. You know what? We need to introduce the Smitties to Flavortown. Welcome to Flavortown, Smitties. Anyway, guys, we have rambled on. I said it'd be short. We've gone on forever, which happens every time.
Jay, it really does.
Jay, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, Steve.
And to all of you guys that listen, you guys have made us the number one muskie podcast for 2 years straight. You guys are awesome. We appreciate it. I hope you have a great holiday. I hope that you get all the musky baits that you want, or the rod or the reel that you want. I hope that you are making strides to make your life the way you want it to be. That is the most important thing in life, is getting to a place where you're happy. So I hope you find that, and I hope you have a great holiday, and we will see you next week post-Christmas, Jay.
New Year special.
The horrible, bad, pepsificated New Year special. Say goodnight, Jaybird.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeehaw.